Hello, my name is Rachel Swanson, and my favorite thing is doing embodied yoga practice.
Welcome to the Finding Favorites podcast, where we explore your favorite things without using an algorithm. Here's your host, Leah Jones.
Welcome to Finding Favorites. This is the podcast where we learn about people's favorite things and we get recommendations without using an algorithm. Tonight, it's a late night. It's not late. It's just dark like it's super late. It is 8:30 on a Monday, and I'm like, it's midnight. We're cozy. We're not, but we are cozy. I'm here tonight with Rachel Swanson. She is a creativity coach. She works on creative technology solutions. She works with schools and businesses to develop high-impact uses of technology and helps people be more creative, efficient, meaningful work. Her website does one-on-one coaching, creativity jams, visual storytelling. We were introduced by my friend Amy Guth, which means that Rachel is a good person from the get-go. Rachel, how are you doing tonight?
I am doing so well. I also am feeling the cold, dark November weather, but I'm doing very well.
Yeah, I think it did. It snow today? Did it snow for you?
Yes,
today?
I think it did.
I looked outside briefly and I was like, do I need to clean my glasses or is it snow?
Yeah, it was a sad moment for me, but I'm adjusting slowly.
How has your fall been? Are you do you get into spooky season? Are you a Halloween person?
So I am a Halloween person now. As a child, we weren't allowed to celebrate Halloween. So I'm making up for lost time by just going full on for Halloween, matching costumes for my family, really getting into just all of the spookiness, the witchiness, you know, just the full pendulum swing from my upbringing.
What were your matching costumes this year?
This year, my two sons were Mario and Luigi, and my partner and I were the two sides of a Switch controller.
Oh my gosh. That's so clever.
We wanted to give the illusion that we were in control, even though that's rarely the case.
How old are your boys?
They're 8 and 2, almost 3. Yes.
Very fun.
Yep.
Very fun ages. So how do you, all I know is that we both know Amy. How do you know Amy?
So Amy and I met because we were doing yoga teacher training together. And I saw her in the room and she has such dynamic, wonderful energy. And I was like, I need to know that woman. And we became friends over the course of our 6 months or so of weekend trainings. And yeah, I was not wrong. She's one of my favorites for sure.
Yeah, she is. She's a blast. We met doing comedy many years ago. Many, many years ago. We went to the same open mics.
Yep. I could see that.
Yeah.
That sounds like Amy. Yeah.
And then we ran into each other at synagogue a few years later. And I was like, wait, don't I know you from the Tequila Roadhouse?
I wish that that could be how everyone knows me.
Right? Just from the Tequila Roadhouse. Yep. It was a wild little bar in Old Town a million years ago. Yep.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And do you teach yoga or was that a, yeah, so do you teach yoga?
So yes, occasionally, but I really took the yoga class because I wanted to become better at doing yoga and I like to understand how things work. And I just loved yoga, and it's actually what I was planning to talk about tonight. So perfect segue, but I decided that I wanted to stretch myself and get certified to be able to teach.
Interesting. Well, we'll just jump right into it. And if we circle back on other chit chat, it's great.
Sounds good.
One of the things I like to know are people's origin stories. So when did you take your first yoga class, or when did it like cross your radar as something you might want to do?
So the honest truth is that I hated yoga for a really long time. I took a couple of yoga classes at various studios, and it felt like a sort of thing that I should like. Mm-hmm. Kind of like eating healthy and, you know, like doing the right thing. Yep. It also felt like something that was for other people and not for me.
Sure.
And I enjoyed, like as a child, I enjoyed doing some physical activity. Like I danced in jazz dance classes. And as I got older, it felt like I wasn't really into organized sports, didn't really like working out that much. And it was kind of a revelation that I could enjoy moving my body in any kind of way, because that just generally hadn't been a positive experience for me. PE class was the bane of my existence. I took it as an independent study in high school, and that meant that I just basically had to write about PE and pretend that I was doing the workouts. Yeah. So it's pretty great.
You're like, I designed a special workout for myself called stair stepping, which looked a lot like doing the laundry.
Exactly. I probably walked like, you know, a mile today, maybe.
Right. Yep. Right.
Yep.
No, I hear you on that. I think probably the first times I went to yoga, it was like kind of the equivalent of like Brussels sprouts or broccoli. Yep. Like, I know it's stretching is good, but it's such an intimidating activity.
Yes. And I think so. I am in a body that is not small. And so for me, and that's always been the case, but especially as I've gotten older and had children, it also feels like yoga has been inaccessible for fat bodies. And so one of the things that, so I just stayed away from it because every yoga teacher I would go to was very skinny and could bend her leg, you know, around her head several times. And I have a stomach, so when I fold forward, it doesn't fold the same way that it does in skin. And I, you know, sitting on my knees is different. Everything feels different in a fat body. Mm-hmm. And when you're only getting instructions from someone whose body is very different from yours, it can feel incredibly intimidating.
Yeah. And someone who's only ever been in a thin body, you know, is really hard to take instruction from them.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
So was there, did you find a teacher who was heavier? At what moment did you say, did you have a, how, what was the aha or the crescendo, maybe it wasn't a moment where you found yourself in a class that made it accessible to you and your body or gave you the vision that it could become accessible to you?
So I had had my first son, and I had had I had postpartum depression after having my first son, and it was really hard for me to reconnect to my body after that experience. And then I'd had several medical issues that meant that I had a whole year of surgeries. And so it really was hard for, even more so than when you're in pain and it's chronic pain, the dissociation from your body is easy to do. You kind of, like for me, I just lived in my head because it was too painful to live in my body. And so it was not too long. I was in the recovery process, and one of my friends invited me to go to a yoga class with her. And I was like, girl, I just don't want to. Like, I was like, I mean, and if I'm going to work out, it was like things that would be like lifting weights or something that made me feel powerful and strong. And, you know, and I was like, oh, and she's like, look, it's really weird yoga. I can't even really explain it to you, but I think you'll enjoy it. You should just come. And I was like, fine. And this is the true testament of my care for this friend that I showed up. And
to really weird yoga.
To really weird yoga. She didn't remember the name of it. So eventually I did find out that it was called Kundalini Yoga. And that was kind of irrelevant the night that I went. So I went to this class. The teacher her name is Karan Paul Carr, and I still take classes with her. She's wonderful. Mm-hmm. And the class is a little bit different from a traditional like vinyasa yoga class because mm-hmm. vinyasa, you're moving from pose to pose. It's very much about a flow. Kundalini is about creating energy and working that energy up your spine. And okay. so there's bursts of intensity and then you have times of rest and, mm-hmm. and just sitting and meditating. So I did this class and it was totally weird. And also it was a revelation. I remember thinking to myself, no, how come no one's ever taught me how to pray with my body before?
Yeah. Ooh, that's beautiful.
So it was just powerful. And I felt in people talk about embodied living and embodied experiences. I felt like I had moved from my head into my body. Like I was like mm-hmm. sinking into my body again after years of disconnection. It was so such yeah. a powerful experience for me.
Wow. And just one, that just that first class was that powerful.
Just that first class was that powerful. And after the class, the teacher came up and I was like, what's going on? Like, I don't really understand what this yoga is. Mm-hmm. We did some chanting. That felt super weird. And I wasn't sure how I felt about that. So right. I was like, what? And the teacher was so kind and made everything accessible and talked through everything we had done and kind of explained the science about it, which I'm a pretty cerebral person, as we've already established. Yeah. And so that was really helpful to me. And invited us to come back. And at the end of class, every class, you sit and drink a cup of hot yogi tea. And so mm-hmm. I did. That, too, kind of goes against all of my warning bells, which is like, ding, 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 new people, weird people. I don't know. But I did it.
I did it. You had your tea. You chanted.
It's all the things that I would definitely have, kind of side-eyed if somebody else had told me about it. So, and from there, I kept going. I went about once a week for a really long time. And
yeah.
because it just felt so amazing in my body. And it was this totally different embodied experience.
Yeah. And was that teacher pretty good about making adjustments for people with different bodies?
Yes. So she's really wonderful because she is incredibly accommodating of all sorts of body experiences and mm-hmm. is a trauma-informed practitioner. And so yeah. she's even aware of how different poses might be difficult for survivors of sexual abuse or how different right. poses would be challenging for people of different kinds of bodies. So one of the things that she would consistently say in class and still does is whatever is accessible in your body today. And mm. I love that phrase because
yeah.
it's just every day is different. Some days I can do some poses and some days I can't because sometimes yeah. things are accessible in my body and sometimes they aren't. And it's a yeah. fluid thing. It's not like, if you can't do that, which is how things had been phrased before, like, you're going to sit like this. If you can't do that, maybe try this. You know,
right.
it's a very different conversation.
Go to the corner, do child's pose, and wait until you can rejoin the class.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yep.
I think I've been to that yoga class.
I think I've been to only that yoga class prior to this yeah. experience where it was just like, inhale, exhale. And I'm like getting angrier and angrier the longer the class is uh-huh. going. Like I'm supposed to be feeling some sort of inner peace and mostly I'm just feeling right. inner resentment and anger. So mm-hmm. yeah.
Not great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have something that we say at my synagogue for certain prayers where it's like rise in body or spirit, you know, like yeah. as you're able.
I love that.
Yeah. And I think it's really important to help people learn to honor what their bodies can do on a particular day.
Yep.
And that days may look different.
And they do. And
yeah,
what is accessible in a body is always different. And there's also a conversation about she'll say, if this isn't accessible to you today, just visualize yourself doing the pose. and you'll mm-hmm. still get the benefits of the pose. That it's that's powerful too. And it's true when you look at the science of it. Our brains are so powerful and can create bodily experiences for us, even if we're not moving our body. So it checks out from a scientific standpoint, and it's also making the whole class so much more accessible.
Right. I mean, that makes it make. Now that you say it, it makes sense to me because the only team sport I did, well, I did two team sports, I guess, in high school. Like I was on the swim team for 1 year, and then I was in marching band, which I consider a team sport. We were always in the locker room visualizing our races. Yeah. Always like you're on the starting block. How does it feel? You hear the buzzer, you hit the water, you go in smooth. You take your first stroke. And so, right, in that 1 year of competitive swimming, we always visualize the race and winning the race before we got in the water. Yeah. But I've never heard anyone in an exercise class say, you know, visualize yourself doing this. And that really speaks to me. That's really interesting.
Mm-hmm. It is. And visualization is such a powerful tool. It's something I use in my coaching work too, because if we can imagine it, then we can start to create it and put it into a reality. Mm-hmm.
When for you did it go? So you were studying Kundalini with her. Did you branch out and try other teachers or what does exploring yoga start to look like for you?
Yeah, so I branched out. I tried other teachers and tried other classes, and then I also tried other kinds of yoga. So it wasn't just this class or this kind of yoga. And the permission I had to be able to do the Kundalini yoga gave me the confidence to do other things. So I think there was a shift happening in me at the same time that this was going on from I'm not the kind of person who can do yoga. I'm not the kind of, my body is not the kind of body that can do this. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, my story also included a lot of limiting thoughts of I will be able to accomplish business success when I lose 50 pounds. Mm-hmm. I will be able to have another baby when I lose 50 pounds. I will be able to do whatever thing it is. I'm going to be able to do all of that at some future date, magical future date when my body is acceptable and good and right. Mm-hmm. And I started to have this shift in me, which is, why am I waiting to start my life?
Yeah.
Why am I living a life that's halfway there for some distant point that is not even guaranteed to me? And when I started going to the yoga class, I started embodying my body. I had this awakening in my body of my body is good. My body is good. Mm-hmm. My body has done incredible things. My body has survived incredible things. I can stop waiting. I can stop waiting to start my life, and I can just live my life. So that opened up all kinds of things, because when you stop waiting for permission from some external force and you're just like,
right,
I'm going to just go and do the things that I want to do, and other people can feel however they want about a fat person walking around in yoga clothes doing yoga.
Right.
That's their deal. That's not my deal. And it really has changed everything in my life.
Yeah. Yeah. I have found a few years ago, I was preparing for a hysterectomy. And so I was like, I went to Pilates for like 6 months before the surgery. Because I was like, I know I need stronger core. The stronger core will help this surgery. And then I was like, oh my gosh, even though I'm tall and fat and in a big body, I went to this amazing studio where I wrote them before I went. And I was like, no weight loss talk, no body, no summer body, no bikini body talk. This is the body I have, and like body neutrality, or I'm not coming in. I'm not motivated by being yelled at. And they were phenomenal. It was mind, body, maybe it was mind, body, spirit. And they've since closed shop, and now there's a new Pilates studio a couple blocks away from me. But everyone there trained with the woman I had been seeing. And so now I'm currently being treated for breast cancer, and they've been doing research to figure out like how to make a safe Pilates practice for me that'll help with like lymphatic drainage and like how can I keep my body strong while I go through this, but that's not about like pink ribbons warrior stuff, because that's not the experience I'm here for. Mm-hmm. So it's so important to find the teachers that can make the space for our bodies, and then to get comfortable taking the space our bodies take. Yes. You know, like not to be made small anymore.
Yes. That you have permission to take up space. And when I was like, mm-hmm. I have permission to exist in a body that weighs 260 pounds. I do. I have permission yep. to exist in that body and to live the life I want to live in that body and to be loved mm-hmm. in this body and to be yep. whole in this body and not need to be constantly shrinking myself. And what happened right. for me anyway is then it bleeds out into other areas of your life, or you know, where for me mm-hmm. it was like, oh well, I'm going to take up more space at my job, and I'm going to take up more space in my relationships with other people mm-hmm. because I have permission to be big and bold and confident and loud yeah. and take up space.
Yep. Did your coaching business come after yoga?
The coaching business came after yoga. Yes. yep. uh-huh. I think what's also been powerful is that the coaching business, so that was always something that I had thought about doing. I started as a mm-hmm. public school teacher in Chicago Public Schools and went on to do coaching in schools for other people. And mm-hmm. I have this just desire to work for myself, have my own business, be an entrepreneur, yeah. be my own boss. And it was scary to let go of some of the ties to the security that comes with a job that pays you every 2 weeks, every, you know, no matter what.
And direct deposit is a beautiful thing.
It's a beautiful thing. And
yes.
And necessary. And a lot of times, like, you know, thinking about health things and wanting health insurance and, you know, like, and mm-hmm. as someone who's had her fair share of health issues, that's non-negotiable yeah. for me, you know, things like that. So what happened is over time, I started to take little steps to build a client base while working another job. And mm-hmm. people started. So it turns out that when you bring your light and confidence and bigness and boldness into the world, people are like, hey, mm-hmm. what's going on for you? Talk to me. I want to know what yep. juice are you drinking? Like, I want to drink the juice too. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, it's this crazy thing where I just gave myself permission to show up, to live my life. Yep. That's all it is. Like, you don't have to pay money for it. Nobody, you know, like you just, I stopped waiting for someone else's approval. And so I started building that on the side. And then it was probably 4 or 5 years. And then eventually had enough business that I mm-hmm. quit my day job. And
yeah,
my side hustle became my day job.
Oh, so exciting. Yeah. And where in that did you go to the yoga training. When did you learn how to make your own yogurt?
I will say though, isn't yogurt the kind of thing that you would think yoga people eat?
Yes. Of course they do.
It's like yoga commercials are just yogurt commercials are just yoga yes. people. Yes. I don't like yogurt either, for the record. I won't eat it. I okay, so then it was probably, I think it was, it was before the pandemic. So it would have been in 2019 that we started. And my teacher, Karan Paul, had been saying that they were going to have the yoga teacher training at the studio. Mm-hmm. And I immediately was like, I want to do that. And I thought the teacher training was going to be maybe, I was like, maybe I'll have to quit my job. I don't know, but I'm going to go. I'm going to do this teacher training.
Yeah.
And also, I still had, I was signing up for, to do the class. It was on weekends, one weekend a month for 6 months. And as I was signing up, you apply. And I was like, they're not going to accept me because I'm too fat. Ugh, like, I was sure of it. Like, I was so certain that everything was cool. It's cool to go to the studio. It's cool. But there's still that, like, limiting voice.
Yeah.
So the teacher would just call everybody and say, hey, like, just to check in and be like, hey, you applied. Let's talk. And she was like, hey, Rach, you applied. Talk to me about, you know, your interests. I'm like, I've really been wanting to do that. She's like, great. Okay, so here's the payment. Like there, no talk about my body. This was not an issue for anyone but for me.
Right.
So I was like, oh, okay. So we started doing the yoga teacher training and got through almost all of it. And then we had the lovely global pandemic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I remember the pandemic like it was still ongoing and part of our lives.
Forever and ever.
Oh, boy.
Yep.
Did you find that the trainings helped you with the cerebral side of it? Did it get real, like, technical anatomy stuff? Or was it – what did you learn in teacher training?
It was – yes, it helped a lot with the cerebral side of the classes and understanding the science behind the poses, understanding the history of the yoga, understanding the anatomy and the different systems of anatomy, which is really involved when you're talking about yoga.
Yeah.
And also understanding some of the logistics if we were wanting to teach and what we had to consider in having class of people and how we could create classes that were safe for all bodies and all cultures and all experiences of people that might be coming to our class.
Yeah. So was this everything from liability insurance and finances through to what the words that come out of your mouth?
It kind of was. And there was some, like, lifestyle stuff that I was like, I'm not doing that. People would. I come from a fundamentalist background as a child. And so I am really wary of fundamentalism and all of its many forms that it shows up in a life. And so I was like, I am not trading one kind of fundamentalism for another. So you can keep your yogic lifestyle to yourself. And I'm just here for the extracurriculars. Yep. But
Amazing.
But I appreciated knowing about it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Can we talk about what are some of the things you do to make yoga work for your body?
Yeah, definitely. So I am a big proponent of using props at any point. Mm-hmm. So whether that's straps to make a pose more accessible or blocks. There was one class where a woman actually brought me a block in the middle, which I was like, should I be offended? I don't know if I'm offended. But it was actually just really nice because I clearly couldn't do the pose. And she was getting a block for herself and she just grabbed one for me too. And it was really sweet. And blocks to make the pose to make the angles work out, because so much of yoga is about angles and having the right angles. And I realize I don't have to be in a lot of pain in the poses, right? Like, I actually the poses can become much more accessible if I'm willing to use some of those props and the tools that are there for that very reason. It also is helpful to me to realize that there were ways in which There were poses that I could do that people in smaller bodies didn't have access to. There were poses that...
Like what? What can we do? What do we get to do that the little people can't do?
Well, I know, right? But, well, there was just, like, various, like, I'm amazed at the number of people that really, their hips are really tight. And so when they get into just an easy pose, you know, with your legs kind of crossed, a lot of people's legs kind of go, or their knees go up really high, and they use blocks to prop and support their knees because that's an uncomfortable position for them. And I can cross my legs all day, every day. So I was like, oh, this is great.
I can still do crisscross applesauce or a butterfly pose, right? It's such a nice stretch. And I mean, my legs go to sleep. I can't do it all day because I do get those tingly legs, I can get into those.
I do too. I also have found that there's, for me, I have a little bit of a, if someone else isn't doing a pose, like if I'm in a class and a skinny person isn't doing a pose, it's like, oh, they must be going through something, or they're just breathing, or there's whatever. In my mind, if a fat person is in class and not doing a pose, it's because they're incapable of doing that pose, or they're lazy, or there's some sort of whatever it is that is the stigma there. And so it was, I remember I had been doing yoga for a long time, and I would just work so hard in the classes because, you know, I was representing every fat person everywhere who wanted to do yoga.
Right.
And there was this one class where I just really wasn't feeling it. And I just sat during one of the poses, an easy pose. And I was like, I have permission to not do two. Like, I don't have to prove anything. And that was an experience that came after several years of doing yoga, where I gave myself permission to actually be responsive to what was happening in my body instead of, again, that external message and the external voices of how I felt like I should be.
Right. The idea that if you slowed down, then all fat people are lazy.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I feel that when I'm like buying groceries or eating food in public, I'm like, oh, do people want to see a fat woman eat a hamburger?
Yep.
You know, like, what does this say about us? To everyone.
It's just proving someone's point. I'm like, I'll just eat the hamburger at home. I'll eat a salad while I'm out in public.
Yeah.
That's some bullshit. But it's in my head.
It's total bullshit.
Yep.
Yeah. It's some of that stuff that you have to overcome.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
We can't all be women laughing with salads.
We can't.
You know?
What are those salads saying that's so funny?
Nothing. It's the waiter who dropped off the salad that said something funny.
I'm just saying.
Tried to take it away from them before they were done.
That would be funny.
No, this is my public salad.
I wish someone would.
To eat it.
Yes.
And what did pandemic yoga look like for you? So were you like a studio person who then had to create a home practice, or did you always have a home practice?
I was a studio person that had to create a home practice. Some of the home practice, I would practice some at home, and also that was not my preferred, it still isn't my preferred way to practice. And I went into that moment of like, you're probably better if you do yoga in the morning, first thing. You know, I have, again, these fake stories that I create in my head. And without fail, my son, who's almost three now, but at the time was maybe about one, I would get up, I would start my yoga, I'd be like in some sort of meditational bliss. That's kind of a lie, but you know, I'd be trying to get in the meditational bliss.
Right.
And my son would wake up and I'd be like, see, it just isn't meant to be. And this isn't supposed to happen. So early pandemic, I actually had like a major mental health breakdown, and I was freaking out because of the pandemic. I am someone who deals with anxiety anyway, you know, see also postpartum. And so at that point, I was having a really hard time calming my body down. And so it was helpful to have some of these yoga tools. And also, right. I went and got on Zoloft. And I think that's a really important thing to talk about, which is that everyone should have access to all of the tools available to them to be healthy. And for me, that's yoga and essential oils and, you know, crystals and cards and all the things, and Zoloft and the Western medical system. You know, like, I think it's for me, it all works together.
Yeah, put it all together. I also at the, it was after my breast cancer diagnosis. I was trying to get an ADHD diagnosis this summer and got breast cancer instead.
That's,
you know, pulled.
I'm so sorry.
And the psychiatrist I had lined up to try and work on the ADHD stuff, he was like, well, let's start with Lexapro, treat depression and anxiety. Like, let's start working on that. And then, like, let's get you through this, like, acute. You are in an acute crisis right now. You've just been diagnosed with cancer. And he had, like, agreed with my oncologist. And my oncologist, what he would say is that the level I'm at, stage one, is not a healthcare crisis. He was like, but it's a mental health crisis. It's an emotional crisis. So you've got to, like, find ways to work on that. And so Lexapro has been phenomenal for me, and I don't know how it took me so long to get a prescription.
I do, because once I started going on my SSRI, I was just like, what was the deal? Why did this take so long? You know, it's just all of the stories I created about why. Oh, no, that's just if, you know, it's an emergency. Now I'm like, oh, it turns out you don't have to live with just a general low level of anxiety, depression all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's nice. So did you ever find a way that, like, a home, like an afternoon home practice, or you just were like, give me my mask, get me back in the studio, that's where I gotta be?
So I did. I found a home practice. The yoga studio that I go to had virtual classes. They switched to do virtual. And it took a while in early pandemic to get to a point where it wasn't like me kind of weeping between Zoom calls. I was still working my JOB job at the time and trying to, you know, parent two children who were doing, one who was just a baby and one who was in virtual school. And then it was just like kid pass off, you know, and I think back about that time and it's just kind of like, I'd rather not think back about that time. It'd be better for us if we just kind of like let that part of our life go. I ate a lot of nachos and watched all the way through Parks and Rec. So that was my yoga practice for a couple months. And then, then I got back into it.
That's fair. I ordered a lot of pizza. I watched a lot of Gilmore Girls. I'm right there with you. Yep. Yeah.
I also watched Gilmore Girls. So I hear you. So once we got into a little bit more of a rhythm, and then I would take the space and time to come downstairs to my office. I have space. I got it all set up the way I wanted. And then I can do my yoga practice. And so, and it's not just yoga. I actually have found that I love doing all kinds of workout experiences. I go by the motto of do what feels good. And so some days I just want to walk, and some days I got a feet up trainer. So a lot of days I like to do my upside down, like, headstands in my feet up trainer.
Oh, wait, is that little, it kind of looks like a squatty potty, but it's like for your, it's to help you do like headstands and
it's
stuff?
It's exactly that. Yes.
I see it on TikTok. I see it on TikTok all the time.
Yep. And I got my feet up trainer to do my headstands, which was another thing that I was like, oh, I'll never be able to do a headstand. And I'm like, nope, that's a limiting thought. I don't buy it. I'll get the tool and the prop to help with that. And I love it. I love going upside down. It gets me out of my head. Puts all the, you know, like, and so if I'm in the middle of a of something that's bothering me and I'm getting a little over, like my wheels are spinning and I can't stop spinning, I'm like, okay, I'm going to go do a headstand. And that's what I do. And I just get upside down and it kind of brings me back to a center space.
So is it, because what it does, based on what I've seen on TikTok, is it's getting the weight off of your head and hands and it's putting it on your shoulders. Yep. Is that why it's helpful? Yep.
Yes, exactly. So it has a whole, it has a cushion that you put your head into the like squatty potty, the middle of the squatty potty. And so your shoulders are where your weight is resting.
Okay.
And then since you've got your, it's strong, I use the feet up version, which is made in Germany and really like, it's like, it can hold up to 1,000 pounds. So I'm not worried that it's going to like crash on me. And so then, you kind of, you can jump, like kind of jump up your feet into a crouched position and then you can put your feet up in the, and I could do it after only one or two, like I think I tried once and then on the second time I could get my feet up. It was amazing and so empowering.
Wow. Cool. Yep. That's so cool. Yeah. I've seen that. And I've seen there's also some wonderful like fat yoga instructors on TikTok.
Yes. I follow Jessamine Stanley, who I love. Mm-hmm. And a lot of just other, just general, like people talking about embodied living, like Sonia Renee Taylor, who wrote, The Body Is Not an Apology. That book was really influential to me. Virgie Tovar is amazing and talks, her book, You Have a Right to Be Fat or You Have the Right to Remain Fat. It's maybe about 100 pages and so worth reading. And so my whole Instagram feed is really a lot of body positive images and just a lot of fat people in my feed. So that, because I wanted the pictures that I have in front of my face to be people who look like me or who make it okay for me to be in the body I'm in.
Yes. Yeah. I felt more when I was on Tumblr. On Tumblr, I really curated like fat fashion, a feed of like really diverse bodies and makers and creators. Yeah, I don't know, maybe like 8 years ago on Tumblr. I will say like with in a post-universal standard world, there's more clothing options now. And so even I'm getting fed better. I'm not getting fed ads for like minimizing clothing. I'm getting like fashion with fat models and diverse bodies. And so that feels pretty good too.
It's great. I am really happy. Yeah. There's been a shift even in the last 5 years, I would say. Mm-hmm. And it's much more of a conversation. You know, the show Shrill on Hulu.
Yeah.
I was like, there were times when I cried just because it was like, oh, somebody's experiencing something similar to my experience and they're talking about it on television. And she's not just like the sidekick friend.
Right.
So it's like, oh yeah. So that was really, really empowering too. But I follow body positive yoga instructors, and there are more and more companies are intentionally choosing instructors who aren't just, you know, the standard, very thin kind of yoga instructor, which I love. And when I was thinking about doing yoga, or when I was thinking about doing coaching, and I was in therapy, and I said to my therapist, I'm like, who's going to want to get coached by me? Like, they're going to be like, oh, she can't even get her own life together because she's fat, you know? And my therapist is like, no, she's like, you live fully in your body and people want to be able to do that. And you are going to, there's plenty of people who don't want to be coached by someone who is in a totally different body shape and size than them.
Right.
And they're looking for a coach who looks more like you. And it was an empowering thing to hear that as well.
Yeah. I think that's really true. And when I looked for my new Pilates instructor to take one-on-one from, I did look at all of them and I was like, who's the heaviest teacher? Yep. You know, I want to study with like a heavier woman. I want to study with like an older woman. I want someone who's maybe like had an injury in their life and has come back from it, yep, or has had a surgery. Yep. Like I have a Peloton, but whatever. It's a very nice dryer rack for my towels. Very expensive. The nicest one I've ever bought.
It's the highest quality model of dryer rack.
Yes. Mm-hmm. because I love riding my bike out in the world and I do really enjoy the Peloton, but I have to be really careful in the instructors I pick there, to pick ones that don't talk about beach bodies and don't talk about weight loss and don't talk about food restriction. So I have to be like careful picking my instructors. And then I just like signed up for a challenge. And then after like, I don't know, 7 days, I had failed the challenge, the self-selected challenge, which was just to ride a bike most of March, like every day, get on your bike. It was a Facebook group with like internet friends. And by like March 10th, I had failed and there was no way I was going to finish and win the month. And I was like, well, I guess I'll try riding again in April. Like, yeah. And it's some of those are the limiting thoughts, or like, well, I guess just try again in a month.
Yep.
It's really, I do have a hard time with like picking myself up and like just literally getting back on the bike.
Yep. And
so
like, you know, and I can only do it on Mondays, because if I didn't do it on Monday, wait till next week.
Yeah. Yep. Week is blown. It's Tuesday morning. I'll try that habit next week.
Well, and yeah, I think that goes back to this idea of there's this arrival point that I'm waiting for.
Mm-hmm.
And then I will be worthy or valuable or whatever it is, versus I'm going to just do this because it feels good in my body today and I'm never going to have to do it again if I don't want to. And that's a totally different brain space to take up.
Totally, yes.
And I'm not always in that brain space. I feel better when I am.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. And so you went through the training. Yep. Do you ever teach, or is it just that it's improved your practice and it improves? I imagine it has informed your professional coaching. But I'm curious, if do you ever, are you ever in front of the Zoom or in front of the studio?
So So I decided to sign up. I do teach, and I have taught several classes, and mostly via Zoom. And I had a Sunday afternoon class going for a while because my partner was like, look, if you're going to keep taking these yoga trainer classes, I need you to actually train. He's like, they're expensive. So, like, it's great that you know these things, but let's like do something with
the
skill.
Can we even out the bookkeeping on the training classes?
I mean, I think right now at like a, you know, several thousand dollar expenditure in classes, and I've maybe like netted, I don't know, $50 on teaching classes. Sure. But, you know, I mean, that's an income source now.
It is income, yes. Yes.
But yeah, so I do really enjoy teaching in the class within the Kundalini Yoga community. There has been just a lot going on because the man who started Kundalini Yoga has come forward that he just was abusive and sexually abusive to his students, and in an effort to be thoughtful about victims of the whole community, which I'm coming into quite late and not particularly involved right. in. I took a pause for a little while on teaching the class so that I didn't mm-hmm. perpetuate harm to anyone who yeah. had been harmed by the experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense. It was, now that you say it, it rings a bell. I do remember seeing that I hate when people say, he got me too'd. No, he was held accountable for his actions after a lot of abuse.
A lot of abuse, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that there is going to be a way forward for the yoga because mm-hmm. I think good can come from less than perfect vessels. And mm-hmm. also, as someone who is not a victim of the abuse, I don't know that I'm the one who gets to decide when that timetable happens. Mm-hmm. And so I'm putting a pause. I do still practice the yoga for myself. And also I want to be respectful of the way that it may be traumatic or harmful to other people.
You're so thoughtful in your practice and how you talk about yourself and your body and the community. And if people aren't saying that to you, you are like incredibly thoughtful in your expression about all of this. It's really been wonderful to get to talk to you tonight.
Thank you, Leah. That means a lot to me.
So if people wanted to work with you, creative coaching, find you online, find you on TikTok, what sorts of folks are you looking to work with? Or do you want to be found by?
Yeah, I do a variety of things. And so I have a couple of different ways that people connect. One is through one-on-one coaching, which is the most accessible mm-hmm. to the most people. And in that way, I especially love working with people who are in transition moments of their life and looking mm-hmm. to make changes. And in that setting, then I work with people to set goals we work in 3-month chunks of time. Yeah. And let's set a goal for this time. Let's figure out where we want to be 3 months from now and let me help you get there. And that's been powerful to see the way that having a goal, having a path, and having agency is what they say gives mm-hmm. hope. And it's been really yep. powerful to work with people in that way and with a real eye toward what makes people come alive as they engage with their creative energy and what they imagine mm-hmm. is possible. So that's the first thing. And then I work with schools, and my passion with schools is my belief is that every child deserves to learn in a creative environment. And so I work with teachers yep. and principals to look at their curriculum, to look at their learning opportunities, and think about how do we make these experiences for students even more powerful. And for me, it's an equity and justice issue. And it's something mm-hmm. I think about a lot, that every child in every neighborhood and every school deserves to come to school and have their creative rights met in their learning. Mm-hmm. And so I love working with people in that way. And then I also have a card deck that I made with my friend called the Create Brave card deck. And it's available for pre-order. We got our Kickstarter funded. And so they'll be available in the next couple of months. And
oh my gosh,
it's really cool. It's got, so I designed the art for these, and every card Ooh. Has a different word on it. And the one that I'm looking at right now says, teach, I support others, I share my knowledge and skills. And so the cards themselves are kind of artistic, and you can put them in front of your workplace. And then there's a guidebook that gives you prompts of how to live a more creative and brave life related to whatever card you pull for the day.
Wow. Create Brave. Create
Brave. Yep. And so that all those things are on my website, rachelswansoncoaching.com.
Great. And should people, are you a Twitter, Instagram person, or they should go to your website?
I'm on Instagram as Rachel Swanson Coach, and I'm on Twitter as Rachel D. Swanson. And I do tweet and post on Instagram. And if you're a teacher, I have a Facebook group called Techno Coach that is all for Ooh. People who are coaches in education, working especially around technology.
Yeah. Great. Well, Rachel, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Leah.
For folks who don't know, you can follow me at Chicago Leah on Twitter and TikTok, at Shy Leah on Instagram. Finding Favorites Podcast is Finding Faves Pod on Twitter and Instagram. And please subscribe, leave a review on Apple Podcasts, because all the podcasts say that's important. So I have to believe it's true.
I do, because they tell me to. So,
right?
Yep.
I should spend some quality time actually, like, go through my podcast list and leave reviews for people.
I try. I want people, when they click on my name, to just see a bunch of 5-star reviews of yes. all my favorite things.
Oh my God, I love it. I love it.
Yes. So, including your podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Finding Favorites with Leah Jones. Please make sure to subscribe and drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Now, go out and enjoy your favorite things.
Hello and welcome to Finding Favorites. I'm your host, Leah Jones, and this is the podcast where where I forget what the podcast is about.